You are listening to a production of WRCT Pittsburgh. Any opinions expressed within are solely those of the participants and do not reflect the views of WRCT Radio Incorporated. Questions and comments can be addressed to the Public Affairs Director at pa@wrct.org or by calling 412-621-0728.
Hello and welcome again to this, the Digital Hazard, on the 4th of September, 2011. Eric is not joining me this week because he recently started a very labor-intensive job, new job, but we wish him all the best. He will actually be here next week in studio, sitting right next to me with the funny headphones and the mic with the wind guard and the nice rolly chairs, stuff like that. But he will be in studio next week, so look out for that. Chris, producer, will probably pop in, pop out as the show progresses, but let me just start it off. The first story we have this week is a story about the chatbot program. It's a software called Cleverbot. So these researchers at Cornell rigged up a chatbot system to allow two instances of Cleverbot to talk to each other. One avatar was a British man, and the other was a South Asian woman. So you wonder to yourself, well, what happens when two chatbots talk to each other, especially if you've ever talked to a chatbot in your own personal experience? And apparently the answer is insults. Well, I guess it ranges anywhere from absolute nonsense blather to insults to odd sort of nonsensical philosophical rants. And one of the insults that I like that's cited in the article here is the British man says to the Asian woman, "You were mistaken, which is odd, since memory shouldn't be a problem for you." So apparently these chatbots are aware that they're like computers and not real people, which, and they're also aware that the other is a computer and not a real person, which I find very interesting. It's kind of scary though, that if you put two computers and tell them to talk to each other, you're pretty much going to get the same thing that you get when two people talk to each other. But maybe I'm being a little demeaning.
Matt, I've never spoken to a chatbot before. Have you actually spoken to it? Is this all online on the internet?
Yeah, I mean, you don't actually like verbally talk to a chatbot, but you type
to them.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I guess they must have some way of identifying that they're speaking with another chatbot. I guess I don't know. How did they get them to talk to each other? I looked through this article and it didn't really say, because if you can't verbally speak to them and it wasn't like an audio cable connecting two computers,
I think that they just like routed the output of one instance.
Right, they piped the one into the other.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's well, that's pretty cool. But I don't know. I think it's kind of cool. And I think they say in the article that this is really a step forward in artificial intelligence. Right?
Yeah,
that
I mean,
really like showing that. That artificial intelligence actually exists in a real context by this application.
Very true, as if Watson didn't prove that for us already.
Oh, Watson.
All right, the next story is just sort of a quick one, but as you adjust my mic stand live to tape, it's a quick one, just sort of pointing out a vulnerability in Adobe Photoshop CS5. As of press time, I don't believe that it has been patched by Adobe or Adobe has even really addressed it, but it's certainly been up. What it is, it's just a vulnerability that allows remote attackers to execute arbitrary code on vulnerable installations of Photoshop CS5 through malicious GIF files. So if you remember GIFs from like the web of the 90s, where the animated picture.
Yeah, well, I was looking at a bunch of those last night, actually. yeah, this is kind of cool because this is like a, looking at this, it says the UShort image height value crafted with an invalid valid value, and then there's memory corruption and probably a NOP slide or something to some other malicious code. So this is like a real classic vulnerability, and you'd think that Adobe would be on top of this. But I guess their programs are so large. There's so much going on. I guess I can understand something. But this is kind of a big deal.
Yeah, it is.
This is a real vulnerability.
Absolutely.
In their software. So I'm kind of disappointed a little bit.
Although it's interesting that CS5, which is actually like Photoshop 12, I believe, they haven't like done this. But it wasn't, I mean, CS4 wasn't vulnerable and the previous versions wasn't vulnerable.
That's interesting. So
we wonder. Must have been something in the code base that they changed.
Yeah.
CS4 and CS5.
We wonder what did they change, because this is such a basic, what, image height.
Exactly.
You know, this is a pretty basic component. So why is it changing? I don't know. Kind of insight into the way Adobe thinks when they program.
Very true. Mm-hmm. Speaking of insight, if you had insight into Eric Schmidt's brain, you would know that he says that if you can't use your real name on Google Plus, then he doesn't want you on Google Plus.
Yeah.
The meaning of what he said was basically that Google Plus is primarily as an identity service, so you're supposed to be able to find your friends. You're supposed to be able to find what they like, what they do, things like that. But so as such, real names are very important. But as I was going through this, I immediately thought of LinkedIn, which is a social network, but it's a business. It's like a business social network. It's how to get a job kind of a social network.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see where LinkedIn would actually be in the position to say this, is that they don't want you applying for a job or making a false resume. But Google Plus is really like Facebook. So why can't I go under an alias?
Yeah.
I can go under an alias on Facebook.
It's interesting you bring up LinkedIn, because when I saw this originally, that's what I thought of first too, because that is an identity service, one that I'm not personally a big fan of. Everyone invites me, join LinkedIn. And I'm like, I don't want to join LinkedIn. Why do I want to be part of that group? But yes, you're right. Google Plus is supposed to be like Facebook, a social networking application. And when Facebook began, at least with my group of friends, there was kind of that unspoken rule where you're supposed to use your real name. It's better than MySpace. You know, MySpace, you can put it whatever you want. And Facebook for a while was pretty, if I remember, stringent about names. Like, I think you could put in your name and you couldn't change anything but your first name or something like that. I don't remember what the
other was. But there always was support in Facebook for like a maiden name.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I married, so this is my last name, but I was also known as something else.
So you're saying Google Plus, you can't even put a maiden name in?
I bet you Google Plus, you can put a maiden name in. But it's just Eric Schmidt, when he was asked about this, he goes like, he said that quote unquote, the internet would be a better place if we knew you were a real person rather than a dog or a fake person. Some people are just evil and we shouldn't be able. And we should be able to ID them and rank them downward.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing that it's mentioned in the article is that Bradley Horowitz, who's also on the Google Plus team, articulates a very different view. I guess there isn't, like, there's a central plan for what Google wants to do with Google Plus, but it's just not the same. But there's dissenting opinions within the project.
That's interesting, because I could see how this is very controversial. People want their freedom of speech in order to be named whatever they want on these social media sites. But in a way, I kind of like this idea, because we're kind of getting back to maybe the very early days of the internet, when people had no firewalls and people had no protection mechanisms, not because they necessarily trusted anyone, but there was no problems. No one was really concerned, because I guess everyone inherently did trust everyone. So I'd like to, in a way, try at least to get the internet back to something like that. And by doing this, I'd say that, you know, we're entrusting everyone else by providing our full identity, at least full names. That's a first step here, you know?
I mean, it is a very interesting thing to talk about what you want to be able to keep to yourself and what you want other people to be able to know about you. I'll give an anecdote here. I was walking back Friday night, I guess it was like early Saturday morning, and I found this girl's phone on the sidewalk, and it was her phone and her student ID. But her phone was lock screen protected, you know. I'm not gonna try to break that. I'm not. The point was I'm giving it back to her. Because she has a CMU ID, I look up her Android ID, and I send her an email like, oh, I found your phone, like, just email me back and we'll find each other and I'll give it to you. And it came across like 5 o'clock last night, and I had not gotten an email from her. So I go on Facebook and I pull up her Facebook profile, and of course I'm not friends with her, but I learned that she is a member of a sorority. And I was like, oh, this should be easy. Walk over to the sorority, knock on the door. The girl, like some girl, answers the door, and I was like, hi, I'm looking for this girl. This is her phone and her ID. Like, I found it and I emailed her, but she never got back to me. And she was like, oh my God, like, she's going to be so happy that you brought this back. I was like, okay, whatever. Here you go. But I mean, it is like, if I didn't know that she was in a sorority, mm-hmm. I would probably still have the phone. I'd probably still be carrying around the phone waiting for her to either call it and talk to her and tell her that I had her phone, or email me and try to find her to give it back.
So in a way, it is good that she uses her real name.
It is,
on the Facebook.
On the Facebook. Yeah. Drop the "the."
It's clean. I like the. I think it's a throwback to the earlier era.
Yeah.
But you make a very good point, and I
agree. If she hadn't put up enough information for me to find it, then she wouldn't have gotten her phone back.
Yeah. Or she could have just checked her email. Like everyone else does.
We should all check our email. all right. So our next story, there was a little hullabaloo about, wow, I can see your cursor in Google Docs. This is amazing.
No, I can't see your cursor.
Can't you?
Oh, you mean the little blinking cursor.
Yeah, the little blinking cursor.
It's
so I'm there and you're there.
It's just before the number 3. Do you see it?
Yeah, I see yours.
That's really cool.
That is really cool.
I don't see. Where's your cursor?
Mine's in between the M and the O in remote.
Oh, I don't see that.
Oh, really?
Where's room? I don't even see the word room. I see. Oh, that CS5. Is so cool.
That is so cool.
Wow.
Wow, making discoveries every day.
That would be, that's pretty cool. Hello, there you are. Okay, so this is tablets, right?
Tablets, yeah.
Amazon. What's your intro to this? I'm sure you have something creative.
Well, I just saw, ooh, Chris is right there. I was like, whoa, that's cool. sorry, okay. Amazon. There was a little bit of back and forth this week about how if Amazon sort of leveraged the power of the Kindle, that they could sell 5 million tablets in 3 months, which isn't iPad numbers, but it's really darn close.
It's very good.
It's very, very, yeah. any company who could actually write on paper, there is no reason we should not be able to sell 5 million units in 3 months. Mm-hmm. Like, that is very good business. So Jeff Bezos was talking, and he basically just sort of put this up that he could sell 3 to 5 million units in Q4 if they came out with a tablet, which is interesting because if you were also paying attention, HP's touchpad, it was up at like $400, and then they said, we're not going to make it anymore. So they brought the price down to $100, and it sold like hotcakes.
Yeah.
And then actually HP had to go, oh, it's selling so well at $100, we'll make a few more just to punch the numbers a little bit.
Do you think after all this time people would actually learn about how the technology business works and that, you know, if you really want to sell them, you can't put the price that high. And it doesn't matter how low the price is as long as it, you know, you recover basic costs, obviously.
Exactly.
But just lower the price, you're going to sell so many of them. And nowadays with so many different devices, you know, you have to really compete on that level. I mean, look at Apple. They do that kind of stuff, right? $99 for this, whatever. And it's a good price. And they sell millions of them.
Right. Look at the iTunes store, 99 cents for a song.
99 cents for a song. Yeah.
Would you have thought of 99 cent songs like way back in the day?
No. Am I still going to spend 99 cents on a song? Probably not. But a lot of people do. A lot of people do. And they make a lot of money on it. So yeah, it works. And I think that's the idea that Amazon is that what their plan is for this, or is this what people, analysts are saying?
This is what analysts are saying, but the interesting thing is the next story is that is the mock-up of Amazon's 7-inch tablet, which actually I think is a very good size for a tablet. I'm still on the fence as to whether we all really need tablets, but... I mean, if you have a smartphone, then you probably don't need a tablet. That's my personal take. I mean, I know, like, oh, it would be nice if you could, like, read on a smartphone. So you'd say, oh, we'll just get a bigger screen. But, I mean, it's about the same form factor as their Kindle. Their Kindle is not a 7-inch screen, but I think the overall size would be about comparable to a Kindle.
Yeah. To describe this to the radio listener, it's 7 inches, as you would expect, with a flat black back to the device, and it has probably about, what you'd say, a half inch to a 1 inch border around the front, and a very nice color display. It's sleek and something that it's kind of like a large version of the iPhone 4 in terms of the way it looks. I think so, but I'm sure, I mean, it'll be built differently. I don't know what material. This is a mock-up, I believe, from
a description
that someone actually held this device. So I don't know how thick it is, but I'm sure it's reminiscent of the Kindle, as you said. And that's what they're working on, is working off of, I mean, the Kindle, which is, you know, great. And Amazon has that foothold in the
mobile market.
Yeah, the e-reader market as well. That's something that Apple can't even get into as well as Amazon has. So they might as well harness that and work with it.
I remember the joke, like when the Kindle was maybe even like a year old product was, mm-hmm. well, how many Kindles have you seen? you joke and you laugh, but Amazon's numbers don't lie. Mm-hmm. Well, we hope they don't lie. And they said that they had sold buku Kindles. And then recently they dropped the price. I think the Kindle started out, it was like $400. Yeah, the Kindle was originally priced at $400 in 2007, mm-hmm. but now you can get it for $114, which I still wouldn't go and spend $114 on an e-reader, mm-hmm. because it's a single-use device.
Yeah.
For $114, it needs to have more than just the single use.
Yeah. E-reader was one of my few mistake purchases.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I have a Sony one, and I think it's a sweet device, but I just can't, I just can't get into it. But, the Kindle, I would prefer a Sony one anyway to a Kindle, especially if it's just an e-reader, because mm-hmm. Amazon just focuses on the e-reader market and books and stuff. I guess the Sony, I feel like they have more potential. But that's just me. I think they're built better. but I digress.
All right. Well, if you want to buy Chris a birthday gift, buy him something made by Sony.
No, that's not what I said. I'm not a big Sony fan either, but if it comes to the e-reader market, I like the Sony ones better. That's just me. I'll stop talking. What's next, man?
All right. The next story is actually an Apple story.
This is so good.
Do you want to introduce it? Go ahead and introduce it.
I don't know how to introduce any of your stories. I listen to this show all the time, but I never really come on and talk. Okay, I love China sometimes. I love China. So these guys, they got some balls. They made this Apple store that's a fake Apple store, but it looks like a real Apple store. It's got the sleek glass walls on the outside. It has this gigantic Apple logo on the front, and it looks real. And they sell real Apple devices. They have a floor dedicated to like hacking them and jailbreaking them that a real Apple store wouldn't. And according to this article, the Apple computer really hates this store, as you would expect.
Why not?
So they're of course all these lawsuits, and I believe they're just blatantly breaking the trademark. I guess it's real trademark infringement, or what exactly is it that they're blatantly? I don't remember where it is.
I think it's just that they're ripping off the look. And I mm-hmm. think that's what the intellectual property that Apple has on their own look.
Yeah, but I think they're actually breaking a couple laws.
Oh, okay.
In China.
Oh,
actually.
Maybe they don't actually have trade rights to sell real Apple products.
Well, they're looking into it. They're right. not. They don't have an Apple authorized retailer sign in the front window of the store.
Right.
But they claim to have permission from another Apple reseller that is allowed to give permission to other companies to distribute these devices. So I think they're looking into it. But what I think is hilarious, mm-hmm. besides all of that, is that in order to prevent themselves from being sued even more, the Apple logo was modified on the front of the store, so they removed the leaf
right
at the top of the Apple. So now it doesn't really look like an Apple. It's kind of like a little mushy blob with a little
with
circle
a bite
taken out
of it.
Yeah. it's really pretty funny. I think it's great. So man, China sometimes. I don't know. I really sometimes
the balls
I like
on
it.
China.
The balls on China. Yeah. You got to have some real balls to do that.
You really do.
Never do that in the United States. That would never work. Imagine Steve Jobs would come to your store with a flamethrower and burn it down.
Probably.
But I think it's a legit store, and they sell everything at higher prices than, at least in the United States. But they're real devices. They're not necessarily knockoffs. Now, I don't know if they sell knockoffs.
They probably do.
Probably do, but they sell real devices too. So that's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
I think in here, not to stay on the story too long.
No, it's fine.
But they have a letter that someone took a photo of that apparently says they have permission to sell devices. Man. And then the company said that they're not able to authorize others to build Apple stores, but they wrote a certificate of authorization for this company to be a reseller of Apple products. And this came from another reseller or marketing agent distributor for the devices in China. So,
right.
So yeah, I think that's really hilarious.
I think, this is absolutely hilarious. The article is littered with the two, like, before and after pictures of how they changed the logo. So feel free to click the link in the show notes and watch and look at the pictures for yourself.
Yeah.
I like the last picture. I think it's the last picture. Mm-hmm. And it's at night, so the Apple logo is lit up. But, like, you look at it, and it's like, well, that is the Apple logo, but there's something wrong.
There's something really wrong. Because, like, you look at it really fast, and you're like, oh, that looks familiar, but I don't really know what it is. That leaf adds so much. Yeah. Oh, but does that actually absolve them from, like, they took the leaf off because of some infringement of trademark, copyright, or something like that. But does that really, I'm sure Steve Jobs would be like, whoa, most logo is intact, you know. It's still our logo. We trademarked both separately and together separately. So,
oh, darn, I was going to try to open a fake Apple store and get rid of the Apple.
Yeah.
So it's just the leaf.
You may need to fill in the little bit, the piece that was bitten off of the Apple.
Bitten off the Apple.
Or they should maybe use an old logo. That would be
the colored
cool.
one. The colored one. Color bars.
Yeah, it's like a retro Apple logo. You know, retro Apple store. They should sell like old school
Mac 2s.
Mac 2s. Yeah, that'd be cool. Mac Classics. One with the okay.
Anyway.
Okay, keep going.
Geeking out. Yeah. G3s. Yeah. Anyway. Hey, I learned how to computer on a G3.
Did you really? Yes. Oh, wow. I had a Compaq Presario.
Oh, yeah?
That was my first personal computer back in the day.
Oh.
Maybe we're a little young for the people who are listening. They're like, oh, I had a Commodore 64 with my 5 1/4 inch floppy disk drive. And I had tape. I had a machine with tape, too.
Really?
That was weird.
Tape.
That it's, you know, the linear storage, or
yeah.
It's not, I mean, I know you know, but I think it's interesting how it's so different from media today in terms of, you know, it's linear. It's like, oh, I got to find this thing. I got to rewind. Oh, that's not the right spot. Rewind even more. And you could use real, like, audio cassette tapes. I think that worked
that
on some,
actually
too.
Yeah, actually, the first version of Microsoft's word processor wasn't called Word.
Mm-hmm.
It was something, but it was distributed on cassette tapes.
On a cassette tape. That's so badass. I love that. Oh, man.
All right, moving on.
Yes.
Moving on. We got to move on here. Sprint has sort of filed another complaint to the DOJ. And actually, we have another story about the DOJ and the T-Mobile AT&T merger. But starting with the Sprint story. Sprint still is saying that the T-Mobile AT&T merger would absolutely destroy jobs, and then they cite a study. Of course, it was commissioned by Sprint, conducted by David Newmark, who was a professor of economics and director for the Center of Economics and Public Policy at UC Irvine. But it focuses on the analysis of the merger, and the conclusion is very obvious that the increased capital investment would theoretically increase American jobs, but that's not what is going to happen.
Mm-hmm. I think the controversy is that with this merger, you're getting the bad signal quality of AT&T, and you're getting the bad customer service of, what is it, T-Mobile. So you're not actually getting any call center jobs, as they claim. This is here, 5,000 call center jobs after the merger. Come on, you're not going to do that. I mean, maybe. But this is kind of scary all around for everybody. Sprint's
really
freaking out. You know, people, I have AT&T. I just renewed my contract a couple months ago, and now I'm kind of freaking out. You don't know what's going to happen. Everybody maybe should go to go to somebody else. What, Verizon? That's not good.
Verizon. Yeah.
Could you still not do the simultaneous data and voice?
On Verizon, yeah.
Yeah, you still can't do that. That's their network, man. What's going on?
It's CDMA.
CDMA, that's what it is.
But it's just scary that, like, the rest of the world uses GSM technology. Mm-hmm. And if AT&T T-Mobile went through,
yeah,
they would be the only GSM carrier in the United States because Sprint and Verizon are a CDMA.
Yeah.
I think, like, Virgin Mobile or somebody still is a GSM, but like
small player,
very small player.
Yeah, but yeah, that's a good point. That's quite a one large market share, kind of like going back to the iPad and the tablets. You know, we're looking for that second player to fill up the rest of the market share. And I think they were also talking about the Samsung Galaxy and how that that someone's trying to fight for that spot, and Amazon may actually grab it.
Grab it.
Yeah.
That's interesting. All right. So our next article, like I said, like I teased before our last article, comes from Wired, and it is that T-Mobile users rejoice at the Justice Department's response to the AT&T merger. And the quote to lead off the article just sums it up. I'm so happy that I don't have to be an AT&T customer.
Which was on a T-Mobile message board.
Right.
Earlier this morning or yesterday, or a couple days ago. Regardless. Yeah. That's why as an AT&T customer, I'm like, uh-oh. Who knows what's going to happen? They just keep surprising us.
Right.
And, oh, this is where it said, AT&T Zero Bars reception merged with T-Mobile's customer support. The result may just collapse into a black hole of suck. Which it
very well
may.
Could've.
And I could see that happening easily. So the Justice Department themselves stopped. They put a hold on this case.
They put a hold on the merger. Mm-hmm. They blocked the AT&T's buying of Deutsche Telekom US,
okay,
which is T-Mobile,
permanently, or this is until we get back. They have to come to some agreement or something like that.
Well, the Justice Department is suing to block the proposed acquisition.
Uh-huh.
So obviously, it still has to pass through somebody. It has to pass through somebody.
I don't know anything about this stuff.
I'm sorry. We're not legal experts.
We're tech guys.
We're not legal experts. We should have taken that double major in EPP and we would actually know.
No. I'm not going to do that. We should have one of those law, like a legal advice show from tech guys. That would be a mess. That would be awful.
I would much rather listen to Sexy Time with Chris and Alex.
Sexy Time with Chris and Alex. That's going to be next semester. I promise, next semester. Actually, I don't think Alex is listening. Alex, are you listening? We should have a Sexy Time this semester. You can put that in the schedule, right?
Well, he was working on the schedule earlier.
He was. Real-time changes. Yeah, it was pretty... digressing once
anyway,
again.
Anyway, sorry. Of course, the merger still has to pass through some body to actually have the merger. But if the Justice Department, if the Justice Department is against the merger, then it probably won't happen, which is a very good thing.
Yeah.
Because you really do need competition in this day and age. But if the lawsuit fails to block the merger, then you really could end up with a lot of people ditching AT&T.
Yeah. AT&T, what? Yes, I agree. And I think if it was a merger of two companies across the RF spectrum here, and we weren't talking about two companies that had, GSM, you know, footholds in GSM, the only ones, pretty much, large players, then we weren't necessarily be worried as much, but it's a monopoly on a part of the spectrum, basically,
exactly,
with one huge, gigantic conglomeration.
I mean, honestly, I think that if one of the other big four, if mm-hmm. one of the big four had to buy T-Mobile, I would rather Sprint bought T-Mobile.
Yeah. I think Sprint could use a little boost like that. Nextel didn't really do it for them. You know, I used to have a Nextel.
Did you really?
I used to have a Nextel. And then
did you have Push to Talk?
I had Push to Talk. Yes, I did. I was one of those cool kids in high school that had the bleep button, you know, and you used to, I was part of that. Yeah, and then I was like, yo, this is whack. And I went to Sprint. And because right after they merged, it was like, oh, you can go to Sprint and you won't cancel your contract. It was like kind of cool. And then I was like, wow, Sprint sucks too.
Where else can I go?
I was like, where else could I go? And then like jumping around and everyone kind of sucks. So, right. You know, that's a different discussion though.
All right. In terms of absolutely WTF mate, kind of.
This is so good too. Oh my God. That can't be serious. All right, introduce this so we can talk about it, please.
In terms of WTF mate stories, I'm just going to read you the headline. Domino's, you know, the pizza joint, mm-hmm. plans to open shop on the moon.
On the moon. And this apparently is not a joke. They racked in exactly how much it would cost at $14
billion. $14 billion.
And what does it say here? The Domino's crust is pretty tasty. Not even a company like Domino's rakes in enough money for an undertaking like that. So they're going to have to get some funding from the government. And everything, seeing as how nothing is there. Why would they want to do that? I don't understand.
Maybe, well, I mean, it comes out of Domino's offices in Japan. So maybe the Japanese have engineered cows that can eat dust and still make milk for cheese.
I wouldn't be surprised.
And then we can chop them up and put that on our pizza too. Uh-huh.
Interesting. This is so ridiculous. It says here that it's not just some practical joke.
It's not like Taco Bell buying the Liberty Bell.
Yeah,
that was an April 1st joke.
Yeah, this is nowhere near April 1st, and it's not a joke, apparently. It must be a joke, though. How could they be serious about this?
That looks like a very real poster. Moon Branch, Domino's.
I wish it was like a Wendy's or something, because I don't really go. I don't need a Domino's.
I don't need a Domino's either.
You know, I mean, maybe a Wendy's. I get a Frosty or something like that, you know. That'd be kind of cool, but I'm not going to go visit the Domino's Moon Branch.
Maybe this is just what we need. I mean, we retired the shuttles, so let's put a fast food joint on the moon.
Incentive to visit?
Incentive to get there.
Yeah, I guess so.
Aren't Americans fat enough already?
Well, I want to say how much I love this graphic, too. And I know we're not on television and we're on the radio here, but it's just like right out of like a 90s, really early 90s, kind of crappy movie crossed with Space Invaders.
Yeah.
Right? In the font. It's so like kind of Space Invaders, like I'm on an Atari 2600 and moving the big, or that was the 5400 had the big yellow ball.
Yeah.
Right? It looks just like that. This is outrageous.
This is outrageous.
I'm mad. This is completely outrageous.
Well, Tutopolis Trisota will no longer have Oh, no, that's the Mars. Never mind. Anyway, I guess 2D, I don't know, should 2D block this? I don't know. If you know who I'm referring to, please send an email to the show, thedigitalhazard@wrct.org. But I'd be interested to know if Tutopolis Trisota would move to block this, even though he sets up shop on Mars. Anyway, that's a little esoteric inside joke. But here we are, and we have come upon the segments section of our show. So let us hand it off to Facebook Frack Ups. All right, the first Facebook frack up we have in the lineup today is Oprah to appear live on Facebook, and she invites her questions. Honestly, when I first read the headline and started to read into the story, it was like, Oprah, didn't you get off of network television to start your own network, OWN, Oprah Winfrey Network, your own network where you own everything?
Yeah.
And you're fighting for programming on your own network, then why do you need to come to Facebook and ask questions?
I don't really understand. What's the incentive here? She's looking for more publicity? Does she really need it? Is that what this is?
I guess.
I don't know. I'm just confused.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, we're burying the story here. She's coming to Facebook on September 8th. And she'll be answering questions for 1 hour on the Facebook Live streaming video starting at 4:30 p.m. Eastern time.
Cool.
Yeah, I guess.
Facebook Live video?
Yeah, I mean, Obama went on Facebook Live.
Yeah, I heard about that.
We reported that on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Some other people went on Facebook Live, too. I'm blanking on the
names.
That's
interesting. But okay.
I guess, I don't know.
I don't know what to say about this.
I really don't know what to say about this either. It's sort of like, have we really hit the point in post-industrial age where, like, social networks have more power than the corporate networks? And a corporate network like head honcho, mm-hmm. like Oprah,
mm-hmm.
needs to come to the social networks in order to get her message out?
I guess. Well, you know, she's probably, I don't know how spread out the Oprah Winfrey Network is. Is it available in most places around the country?
It's on cable. I mean, you have to have cable in order to
get it. It's on cable, yeah. So that's what I'm saying. Like, maybe she's missing she was on, what, it was a regular broadcast network on terrestrial television.
She was on terrestrial television.
Right, before terrestrial television no longer existed. But regardless, I mean, she was everywhere in the whole country. You can get it in. You didn't need cable. You can hook up an antenna to the back of your television and watch Oprah, you know, maybe she's missing that. And you can kind of get that with Facebook. It's kind of replacing that, you know, it kind of replaced what, terrestrial television left behind, you know, so maybe that's what she's missing. Cable is kind of limited. You know how many viewers you have, pretty much. Not statistically, necessarily, but you know everyone's
online.
Watching you. Online.
I meant
on terrestrial television.
Oh,
people were always watching all the time, all across the country. You don't really get that feeling with cable, I feel like, because you just kind of fit in with all those other random channels that no one really watches, you know? It kind of just turns into a flip, you know, where you just flip through the channels. People will, like, put on Channel 4 or whatever she used to be on all day. Every day, you know, and that's what they watch. But people are not going to put on the Oprah Winfrey Network necessarily and watch it all day. You know, it's going to be selective programming. So you don't necessarily have that guarantee that people are going to be watching your programming. But Facebook, everyone's on Facebook nowadays, all the time, all day. I'm on Facebook right now. Wow.
Well, we might as well just throw this in here. Her official Oprah Winfrey page has 6.2 million. Wow, I'm dyslexic here. 6.2 million fans, and she has a Twitter account with 7.2 million followers.
7.2?
Yeah.
That's a lot.
7.2 million. She has more Twitter followers than on her official Oprah Winfrey Facebook page.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I guess. Well, good for Oprah.
Good for Oprah.
I don't know what else to say. It's good. I won't watch it.
I'm not going to watch it either.
I mean, not that I have anything against Oprah either. I mean, I think she's, you know, kind of quite an icon, and I think she should be applauded for what she achieved. But whatever. Facebook Live, too.
That's why we have a segment called Facebook Frackups.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, the other story in Facebook Frackups here. CNBC reports that Facebook is going to launch a music service on September 22nd. Now, this music service would compete with Google Music, Amazon's Cloud Player, iTunes, which bought one of those, Lala. iTunes bought Lala. That was it. And we were expecting the iCloud to have some streaming aspect of it. But, of course, Steve Jobs didn't announce that when he announced the iCloud.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, you're going to go up against iTunes. If you're talking music, you're going to go up against iTunes one way or another. Spotify.
Yeah.
Grooveshark. Like, the list goes on and on.
Yeah. I mean, they all kind of differ in different ways, but that's what makes each one unique. So more competition. And Facebook, really? Like, I feel like, come on.
Facebook has gotten so diluted.
Yeah.
That's
a good way to explain what I'm thinking. Exactly. It's like, just stick to one thing and do it really well, like a lot of other people do, you know? And Google is one of those few that really can kind of go delve into other things. Mm-hmm. And I suppose Apple as well. They're trying so hard to be like that. Just let it go. Just be good at the social media. That's what I say. It's like the live TV or whatever, Facebook Live. Like, I didn't even really know about it just because I don't really care.
But you know, Matt said to me today, do you know you can video chat on Facebook? And I was like, yeah.
I heard about that. Yeah.
It's like, What are you, Facebook, what are you trying to do?
I don't know.
Like, are you trying to be Skype and Google and everything else in my life?
And when it comes to Facebook, like, just don't create another half-assed thing that kind of works, but not really.
Yeah.
You know, because the social media aspect of Facebook, it kind of works, but
not really.
Like, a lot of times, and it frustrates me so much when I, like, click on something and it doesn't work. And then, like, as someone who, like, I kind of develop websites a lot, and I kind of work in that realm. So I'll, like, go and figure out what was broken and be, like, so disappointed in Facebook for breaking something so simple.
Right.
And none of their pages validate. Did you know that?
I did not know
that. Well, you should try that sometimes.
Right.
And you got to get a local validator to
right.
do it because, you know, you got to authenticate to the server. I'm like, they're just another one of those websites. And it really annoys me so much because just do one thing good, please. You're not Google. I was going to throw Microsoft in there, but I don't know about that. Apple does... a couple things.
Well,
Google does a lot of things really well.
Right. Microsoft does one thing.
Okay. Yeah. They've had some bad luck.
But at least the Zune. At least Microsoft mm-hmm. realized that it wasn't going to kill the iPod,
yeah.
so they got rid of it.
But I think the reason why the Zune didn't do that well is because the iPod was there. And I'm not saying that the Zune wasn't a good device, because I think it was really well made.
Right.
I liked it, you know, and I would have... Honestly, I considered getting a Zune, but I was like, well, everyone's got an iPod. I guess I gotta get an iPod, you know? And the competition is what killed it.
Right.
And they're just... They're trying too hard, Facebook. Why? There's so many other versions of these music services, as you said.
Right.
They're just trying to make a little bit of money or be... They're trying to be like Google, and it's annoying. I gotta stop doing that.
You just know that Mark Zuckerberg has a big picture of Steve Jobs in his bedroom, and then he has a big picture of, like, Bill Gates, and then a big picture of, like, Larry Page.
Yeah. it's been going on like this forever. I mean, you watch that Facebook movie, right? And
yeah.
And Social Network is
The Social
called?
Network, yeah.
And yeah, you could smell it. It's so obvious, and it's just frustrating because for the end user, I'm always annoyed with Facebook.
And everyone, like, whenever Facebook changes something, everyone's always like,
so
"Bring
angry.
This back!"
Yeah,
it's like
they're trying too hard. I feel like, and I could see because they're trying to stay in the game, but Facebook, you got such a foothold in social media.
Right,
you make changes, but be be behind all your changes and do a few and make them really good. Don't be like half-ass a whole bunch of stuff.
Just well, we know that it's time to ditch Facebook when the logo changes into like a face and a book, like MySpace, like it was MY
oh,
and then
yeah.
like the underscore.
That was so weird. I was like, oh boy. Yeah. I got rid of my MySpace a long time before that. Yeah, but.
Yeah.
At least MySpace, like they realized that something wasn't working right. Everyone was leaving them for somebody else. And they switched focus, but they maintained the core, which was social media, I guess, and they were good at that. But they realized that their audience was changing.
Yeah. Well, MySpace, I think, was always good at being a band site.
Mm-hmm.
It's
yeah.
just that they diversified by being a personal
mm-hmm.
social network, which worked
yeah.
for a little while.
Yeah.
And then it got old. People got tired of it,
mm-hmm.
and then they switched to something else that was actually written ground up for personal use,
yeah.
Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, MySpace was always good at bands.
Yeah, and they realized that, and they got rid of certain things
mm-hmm.
and focused on what they were good at.
Right.
Right? Facebook is not doing that. Once they opened up from college students to everyone, they're just expanding in all different directions, and
right.
they're kind of doing an okay job, but it's not really going the extra mile, you know?
Mm-hmm.
At least MySpace nowadays, which I don't go on MySpace much anymore, but it seems like that they have an identity now, you know, and they know what they want to do, and I applaud them for that. I used to have a Zanga, too. Do you have a Zanga?
I never had a Zanga.
Maybe that was...
Do you have Orkut? I had
Orkut. No, I don't know what that is.
It was like the first Google social network.
Oh, no way.
Actually, like, I think Orkut developed on its own, and then Google bought them like right up.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just sort of sat under like the more, even more.
Oh, wow.
Section of Google.
Does that tie into Google Plus? Like, did it move
no,
your profile
they
or anything?
Got rid of things.
Oh, that's sad. That's interesting.
I think they got rid of it when they got Google Buzz.
Buzz, yeah. see, but like, look at Google's failures. They're not that many. Buzz was kind of a failure, right? What else? There was maybe Wave. One other thing. The Wave. That was cool.
That was cool.
But a failure.
It was a failure because how are you going to use it?
People didn't need it. People didn't want it. There wasn't that motivation from the population that says, I need something like this. So it didn't work well, you know? So, but there are only a couple failures. I'd consider there to be many more Facebook failures, I guess. I'd probably still have to think about it. But overall, it's just not well polished, and it annoys me, especially the get variables. is that just me? It really annoys me. Like, I will manually go up to my URL bar, remove all of the stuff after that first forward slash, after the Facebook.com, and just reload from the root. It annoys me. Yeah. Like that. Such a minute thing. It's so important. They just don't get it.
But it's also like if Google did that, mm-hmm. you would point at Google and be like, this is unprofessional. Yeah. Fix it.
But they wouldn't even do that because they are that much more professional. Yeah. Hmm.
All right. Well, let's move into the 6-bit byte here. So the first 6-bit byte story is just another sort of security watch out kind of a thing. There was a few fraudulent Google certificates that were made valid this past week. It was a Dutch company has mm-hmm. appeared to issue a digital certificate for Google to someone other than Google who are maybe trying to redirect traffic based in Iran.
Yeah.
It's the Iranian certificate for Google.com.
Mm-hmm. And this was a trusted route. And they claim it was some sort of a breach or something like that. I don't remember exactly. I actually saw this last night because I didn't even look at your show notes till today. Sorry, but last night, Thunderbird was like, "Hey, there's an update," and I was like, "Oh, cool." Whatever. I updated it, and I was like, I wonder what they did, because I love looking at release notes. It makes me feel good sometimes. And I looked at it, and one thing changed. They removed a root certificate, and I was like, okay. Well, I'm glad my Thunderbird still works. You know, whatever. And then I looked into it more, because I know they don't do that kind of stuff often. And that's big, why would they push a whole update to do that, right? That's a big deal. So I looked into it, and it was kind of a big problem.
Yeah,
because they were using those certificates to tunnel traffic or to spoof the man in the middle attacks. They were using them for
it's in the article here. Mozilla said in a blog post that it was, quote, because the extent of the misuse is not clear, we are releasing new versions of Firefox shortly that will revoke trust in DigiNotar root and protect users from this attack.
Yeah.
We will encourage all users to keep their software up to date by regularly applying security updates.
Yeah. And I think it's important for people to realize who aren't very up on root certificates and what they are is that, you know, they're those trusted organizations out there that provide these certificates so that you can trust other sites. That's the whole idea. And the list has grown of companies that we trust to provide those certificates. And it's kind of, I think Firefox has like about 30 or 35 of them now, which is kind of a big number.
Right.
You know, and the fact that they even had one breach is a really big deal because there are all these other organizations that have zero breaches, at least that we know of, you know, and it's a really big deal. We trust them to provide us trust. And because they broke that with just one, it's not appropriate at all. So that's why this is a really big deal.
Right. Unfortunately, Roel Schwushberg, who's a senior researcher at Kaspersky Lab, has says that I expect this type of attack to become somewhat commonplace in time, partially because SSL suffers yet another blow, but we may be looking at a serious compromise.
Yeah. Just another thing that's not working on the intertubes.
All right. So maybe if you were following tech news prior to this show, you saw that the new iPhone prototype was also leaked. It wasn't left in a bar this time and picked up by an Engadget reporter, I think.
I think so.
But the suspects plead not guilty.
Of course. Everybody pleads not guilty.
Unless they know you did it.
Even then, it doesn't matter. So how was this leaked? Somebody sold it? Is that what happened?
It was just misdemeanor theft charges involving the prototype.
Wow. From was it from someone on the inside?
I actually think it was from one of the It was from one of the like sorcerers for, if I remember correctly, like one of the, like the screen. Obviously, if I'm making the parts for the new iPhone,
I'm gonna need the product.
I'm gonna need the product dimensions.
Guy's name is Brian.
Brian.
Brian. He.
Brian Hogan.
He allegedly sold the iPhone prototype, and I say, good job.
Good job.
Go for it, man.
Go for it.
That's, I don't know, but we don't even have a picture.
We really don't have a picture.
I want a picture. He sold it. It's out there. Where'd it go? Who'd he sell it to? Did they get it back? I didn't read this article. I didn't get this far.
The article doesn't say who he sold it to.
Man. The other guy left it in the German beer garden.
The
in
German
California.
Beer garden.
Deutschland. In California.
Deutschland.
But yeah, I'd love a picture of this.
I would love a picture.
But that's a pretty big deal already. Yeah. Hopefully, someone will write up an article and put it maybe on another tech site. Not Engadget. Are you looking for a photo of it?
I'm looking for it.
There's got to be one. But even if there is, it's still a real prototype, right? And who knows what they'll do with the final design? The iPhone 4, when it was released or leaked, I suppose, was already in final production, wasn't it? I mean, they were testing the guy who was using it.
Yeah, the guy was using it.
He was using
to make sure that like the call quality was good.
Exactly. Yeah, he was like a developer or something, and he was using it to test to make sure the software was working well. So even if we saw a picture of it, who would even know if it's the final thing? It's probably in a plastic, like a real crappy plastic.
Well, they probably hit it better than the iPhone when they put the iPhone 4 out.
They put
the iPhone 4 in an iPhone 3 case.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, this is going to be enough obscurity.
Yeah. I mean, you don't. But I guess if he was working on something like call quality, he would need the final device in the final packaging. Because they did have those antenna problems.
Right.
Right. So say they just removed the circuits on the inside and put it inside of a 3G case so it really did look like a 3G. And even if you took it apart, it might look a little different. You wouldn't get the same effect. And you know, you couldn't test it appropriately. This they would need. They should just send them. Were there electronics in it? Was it working like it should, like the last one? Because if you're sending it to the company who's manufacturing the LCDs for it, you probably just need the
specs.
Or even just the case itself, the final design. I don't know.
All right.
What's next?
Well, AT&T 4G LTE went live in Chicago.
That's good.
Yep. So LTE, long-term evolution, is actually a 4G technology. Don't be misled when T-Mobile tells you that they have a 4G network. They don't. They have like a 3.75G network.
Yeah, which is actually a real way of describing it. 3.75. He's not just making that up. It's on Wikipedia, which is the haven of all knowledge. Go check it out.
Anyway, LTE, long-term evolution. AT&T has been saying that they're rolling it out. I think New York was already rolled out. Now Chicago. This is AT&T playing catch up with Verizon because Verizon has rolled out an actual LTE network for not the majority, but many concentrated areas of population.
Yeah. So, hey Matt, what's the coverage of this in Pittsburgh? Do we have it? Do you know?
I know that Sprint has LTE in Pittsburgh,
but
I don't know if AT&T or... you should tell me if AT&T has LTE in Pittsburgh.
Because
you have an AT&T phone.
I do have an AT&T phone, and I didn't check because I bought this in New York, and I asked the guy, so what's the 4G coverage like around here? And he was like, oh, it's pretty good. And I'm like, do you have any more information that it's pretty good? And he's like, no, I mean, it's here. It's in the county. I'm like... I couldn't ask him about Pittsburgh. We could do a speed test right now. You want to do it? Oh, I only have two little bars. You want to do a competition speed test? I got to turn off my Wi-Fi.
I have three bars.
Okay, let's do it. I got the speed test app because I'm really cool. Where is it?
Oh, you're lucky.
I got it on my desktop thing or whatever that's called.
Oh, really? Okay, well, I'm going to go to speedtest.net.
Well, that's what I'm using. Begin test. So, yeah, I have an AT&T phone on the 4G network, whatever that is.
Right.
And you have...
This is still the Nexus One on T-Mobile's network.
Okay, let's see. That should be a higher number. It's pretty big, though.
Oh, well, I'm
better
still
than my old phone. Oh, my God.
Well, you had the old silverback iPhone 1.
Yeah, man. What a classic. I still have it. I could throw my SIM card in there. That'd be cool. I brought it with me. Okay. So now they have coverage in Chicago, right? That's good. But, like, even in New York, right? New York, there's so many people. There's so many problems with coverage.
Right.
And the network being super saturated. And AT&T always had these problems. So, they got 4G.
I mean, AT&T's problems are a structural problem. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just that they don't have the backbone.
Yeah.
For as large of a service body as that they have.
Is it actually a problem with the network backbone, or is it just because there's so many people using AT&T, they can't throw as many cell sites? Is that what it is?
No, I had read articles about this, is that actually their network is not
actually good.
Right. Mm. Is that the fundamental structure of their network was not designed to have as many customers
because
as it does.
You know what? They're probably using Netgear consumer grade switches and routers. That's what it is.
Oh, yeah. Cisco systems. All right. As you're... Wow.
That's
see?
A little, I don't know. These stands aren't working.
These well. Stands are not where I'm holding my mic.
So, did you do a speed test, man? You want to compare?
No, I'm actually still downloading mobile.
Well, I can't tell you. The program?
The program, yeah.
Come on,
if you go to speedtest.net on your mobile phone, it just sends you to the Android store.
Man, the network is so slow. The program didn't download yet. Oh, man.
All right, so there we go. AT&T is faster than T-Mobile in Pittsburgh.
We're running out of time. What else we got on here?
All right, well, real quickly. Microsoft shows off its ribbonized Windows 8 file management interface. So basically, hey, this is what Windows 8 will look like for Windows Explorer.
I want to comment that there were not even any pictures in this article.
Yeah.
I scanned through to look at the, because I didn't care what the text said. I just wanted to see the picture because ribbonized interface.
Yeah. What does that mean?
Yeah. I don't know about the ribbons, man. Like, the ribbons are kind of cool, but they confuse some people who like the old menus.
I really like the old menus.
I kind of do too. I think the new, these take up a little too much space. Especially like my computer is 1024 by 768 and I need all the space I can get.
Amen.
So ribbons, like, it's just, it doesn't work for me. I could see it working for other people. And it's more intuitive, I guess. But as a tech guy who gets all those computer questions, you know, I'll get like my mom call me up and she's like, I don't know how to do this in Word. You know, when the new Word,
right,
the ribbons, when that happened, oh my God, everybody freaked out. But they got used to it.
I skipped 2007. I stuck with 2003 until 2010 came
No
out.
Way. Yeah. Wow. See, I went right to 2007 and I haven't upgraded to 2010.
Oh, really?
Interesting.
All right.
They still have ribbons in 10, right?
It's different, though. They reverted. It's closer to the original layout.
Reverse.
All right. Let's go into science news before we run out of time here. And Gordon Spencer gets mad at us. Okay. Anyway, science news. So our first science story is that astronomers have discovered a planet made of diamond, which really makes me want to, like, go there and chip off, like, some rocks because, hey, the whole planet would pay for the trip back and forth. basically the planet was made of enough carbon and has been sitting in space cooling for as long as it has, that the carbon arranged itself in such the way that it makes diamonds. The article says that, the planet lies 4,000 light years away. So about an eighth of the way toward the center of the Milky Way from Earth. And it's probably the remnant of a once massive star that lost its outer layers to the so-called pulsar star that it orbits. How this planet came to be is that there was two stars that were sitting next to each other and orbiting around each other, but one star was a pulsar, so it had just more mass and began pulling mass away from the smaller one. And as the smaller one lost material, it turned into a planet made of diamond. I'm sorry, just running through this as quick as I can because I'm running out of time. The last science news story here is that the Chinese, going back to the balls on China, the Chinese want to capture an asteroid into Earth's orbit, basically so that they can do some studies, scientific studies on it. The asteroid that they want to rope into orbit around Earth would keep it at a it's a 30-foot wide rock, which shows you how big it is. But it would keep it if it actually hit Earth. We were looking at a fireball that is about 24 miles wide. You get a 24-mile-wide crater, and a fireball so large that trees 200 miles away would spontaneously burst into flames. So that's a little scary. So with that, I'm getting the frantic signal to wrap it up, and I will tell you to go look at the articles on our blog, digitalhazard.org. Give us a call, 412-294-TDHP, that's 8347, and email the show, thedigitalhazard@wrct. For that, I'm Matt Barron, reminding you to beware the digital hazard.